So, 2 days have already passed since I introduced the topic, and I thought maybe I should just briefly summarize. Anybody here that wasn't here 2 days ago? Oh, a few. Okay. Well, we were introduced the topic as controlling the urge to speak, based on the teachings of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur from his essays on the two verses from Upadeshamita describing the six qualities favorable for devotional service, six characteristics, and the six which were unfavorable. And we were specifically speaking on the topic of patience, because in the topic of patience it introduced the concept of the necessity to be patient in the execution of one sadhana. And does anybody remember what Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually described and concludes the topic of patience? What he described was actual patience in devotional service. We discussed it, yes. Yeah, well, one day we'll get Krishna's mercy. But what did he say? How long should we be prepared to wait? like Mukunda, yeah. He said that, you can hear okay? Okay. He said that, he described the karmis, the jnanis, and the bhaktas, they all desire some fruit, that the karmis, the fruit they desire is sense enjoyment. The jnanis, the fruit they desire was liberation. And the bhaktas also aspire some fruit. And the fruit that the bhaktas aspire for was Krishna's pleasure. Yes, Krishna's pleasure. And he said that, of course, he said that one should be patient. And because Krishna's mercy may not, in order to achieve Krishna's pleasure, the mercy required to achieve that may not be so quickly accessible, it may not be so quickly manifest, and he said, therefore, one should be prepared that even to have firm confidence that Krishna's mercy will come, and I will go on serving Krishna, even if it comes now, tomorrow, 10 years from now, 100 years from now, or 100 lives from now, I will go on serving Krishna. He said this type of dhaya, of patience, is required in the execution of bhakti. He concluded that topic. We jumped to the conclusion because essentially we're not talking about patience so much. We're talking about controlling the urge to speak, which is how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur introduced the topic of patience. Is that he began with the verse Vachovego Manasakrota Vegan, that a person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, anger, and the demands of the tongue, belly, and genital, then he can accept disciples all over the world. And then he explained that dhaya or patience is required. Those who are impatient, they cannot do any work. And therefore a devotee must be very patient. And he gave the example that how a sadhaka, first he learns to control himself and then he learns to control the world. And quoted the verse Vachovegam, Manasakrota Vegam. And we told that little story about what does it mean to first control oneself and control the world. We gave the example of Raghunath Das Goswami, who received the benediction from Haridas Thakur that he would totally renounce the world. But Balaramacharya told Govardhan, his father, when his father asked, what benediction did my son get? Balaramacharya told him that your son got the benediction that he will control the whole world. And Govardhan was very happy with that. saying, I control only a small plot of land, and my son will control the whole world. And in essence, Balaramacharya's statement was that Raghunath Das will control the whole world because nothing in this world will be able to control him, because he will be completely renounced from this world. And therefore, nothing can allure him in this world, and he can remain fixed, as he demonstrated how he actually fulfilled that benediction he received from Haridas Thakur, his renunciation. And of course, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur then goes on to continue to describe each characteristic controlling the urge to speak, the mind's demands, and the first is controlling the urge to speak. And he went on to explain that if one doesn't control the urge to speak, and he talks unnecessarily about others, then what will be the result? Does anybody remember? Yeah. He does, yeah, but he'll create enmity, enemies. Yeah, that's what he said. In fact, he said that if speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. We spoke about that. We introduced the topic, and we explained how enmity arises, because if we speak unnecessarily about others, and we said that actually the natural propensity for the living being is to speak about others. And we gave the example that for the devotees who engage in spontaneous devotional service, they're attracted to speaking about Krishna constantly, and such topics are ever fresh. And we quoted the verse from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, that just as Paramahamsas who accept Krishna within the core of their hearts spontaneously speak about Krishna, and such topics are ever fresh, in the same way as materialistic people spontaneously speak about women and sex. And we said that whatever's in the heart, because if the heart is filled with such thoughts, then it doesn't take too much to spontaneously evoke such topics, because whatever's in the heart will come out with a little catalyst. And the Paramahamsas who see Krishna in everything, because they see Krishna everywhere, they always speak about Krishna, and that such topics are ever fresh. Actually, we didn't quote this verse, but it just came to my mind in this connection, but it's also connected. There's a common verse Prabhupada would oftentimes quote, Smartavyam satatam vishnor vismartavyam nojatu chit sarvavidhi nasirisyo etiyo eva kinkura. He quotes that verse that means that Krishna must always be remembered, and Krishna must never be forgotten, and all the rules and prohibitions which are given in the scriptures are meant to serve these two principles. And there's an interesting commentary on this verse by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. He explains that smartavyam sitatam vishnor means that one should always think of Krishna, and one should never forget. He said that for a person who always thinks of Krishna, why must he be conscious of the nishedas, prohibited activities? He said there are prescribed activities which are favorable, and there are nishedas, or prohibitive activities, which are detrimental for one's spiritual growth. But for those whose minds are always fixed on Krishna, they're always speaking about him, like the Paramahamsas we quoted before. Such topics about Krishna are spontaneously evoked from within their heart. They always speak about Krishna. Why should they be so much concerned about prohibited activities? They're not going to engage in them anyways, because they're always spontaneously engaged in speaking about Krishna. Of course, they are concerned about prohibited activities, so that others can learn from their example. But they're not thinking of those things, because they're spontaneously only speaking about Krishna. And others can see by them always speaking about Krishna that they're not doing this, they're not doing that, they're not doing this. Others may see it. But in the person's mind who's absorbed in always speaking about Krishna, such nishedas are not really very relevant. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary in this verse says this verse is obviously not for those who always remember Krishna. Because if they were for always remembering Krishna, then the necessity to understand what the nishedas are would not be so important to them. So he says that the word satatam in this verse, always remember Krishna, means in this particular verse, instead of always, it means every day. Because it's for sadhakas. Because sadhakas are those who are concerned about nishedas, prohibited activities, like prescribed activities, chant 16 rounds every day, time of initiation, nishedas, prohibited activities, no illicit sex, intoxication, gambling. You know, these prescribed activities, prohibited activities. Why? Because we're sadhakas and we still have to restrain ourselves from certain activities which are detrimental for the progress of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, we make vows at the time of initiation that I'll chant Hare Krishna, it's the favorable activity, and I'll refrain from certain activities. It's for sadhaka. And in the same way, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this verse is understood, it's not for those who always remember Krishna, it's for those who are endeavoring to remember Krishna. Therefore, satatam means that every day, and every day means regulating one's life so that every day one is conscious of Krishna. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter, first he says, always fix your mind on me. Those are for those who can always fix their mind on Krishna. But then he gives his concession, says, Ata chittam sadmadhaktam nashaknosi mai stiram abhyasi yukena tato mami chaptam dananjaya. If you can't fix your mind on me, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga and this way cultivate the desire to attain me. We oftentimes explain that Krishna wasn't telling Arjuna he should follow the four regulative principles. He was actually saying, follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga means to regulate your life so that you are able to think of Krishna every day. And this way, cultivate the desire to attain to me. So, in the same way, we may hear many topics about, yes, the best way to avoid or to control the urge to speak is to always speak about Krishna. You'll see that in many places. Acharyas say it, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says it, so many different places. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it, Prabhupada says it, that yes, the best way to avoid speaking unnecessarily about others is to always speak about Krishna. But as we said in answer to the question that was asked the other day, well, okay, how to control the urge to speak? And yes, we can just say always talk about Krishna, but there are so many examples that when people come together, then it somehow it just doesn't spontaneously always happen that way. In fact, what was it, that story in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam? I think, yeah, the story in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam of the, yes, actually I have it, of the Avadhuta Brahman who had his Siksha Gurus. And one of his, it's the story that Krishna tells Uddhava, and it's about King Yayati son Yadu, Maharaj Yadu. He met once this Avadhuta Brahma who had 24 gurus, and he described his 24 gurus. And one of the gurus that he had was a young girl. And the young girl, he described her as a guru, and he tells the story that this young girl was, she was left home alone by her parents and family members one time. They had to go someplace else. And while she was left home, she was of marriageable age, and while she was left at home, several men came to the house with a desire to marry her. And there was nobody else there, so she wanted to receive them favorably, and she decided that she would prepare some food for them. So she went into the other room, and she began beating rice in order to beat the rice, get the husk, husk the rice to prepare some food for them. And she was thinking, as while she was beating the rice, that her bangles in her arm were making a lot of noise. And if all these men hear the bangles on my arm, they'll know what I'm doing. And they'll know I'm beating rice, and they'll think that we're very poor, I'm from a very poor family. So she decided that she would break off. There were conch shell bracelets, that she would break off the conch shell bracelets. And she left two of the bracelets left on each arm. And then she started husking the rice. And even though there were two bracelets left on the arm, they were still making a loud sound while she was husking. So she decided to take one off of each arm, and it was left with one bracelet on each arm, and then there was no more noise. And the Avadhuta Brahman said he learned from this young girl in this example that whenever there is a large group of people together, they'll always be quarreling. And then even if there's two people, and the large group is there, even if there's two people there, there'll be unnecessary talk, frivolous talk, and they'll simply have disagreements. So better, so she learned, he described to Maharaj Yadu, better to be alone. And in fact, so that there's no unnecessary talking, no quarreling, no frivolous talk, no disagreements, better to be alone. He was explaining what he learned from this young girl. And in fact, we quoted the other day, we talked about Madhavendra Puri, how he was an ideal example. We said we should learn from the examples of great Vaishnavas. One of the examples that Lord Chaitanya himself said about Madhavendra Puri is that Madhavendra Puri would always travel everywhere without a companion because he didn't want to take the risk. Right? Didn't want to take a risk. If somebody was with him, he didn't want to take the risk of talking unnecessarily about subject matters. Now, of course, if you think about it, how do we understand this conclusion that we just got from the Avadhuta Brahma, that better to live alone, especially since the other day I gave a Bhagavatam class saying that we should always be in the association of devotees. So it seems to be like there might be some contradiction there. But as always, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur reconciles whatever apparent contradictions there may be. And I have a quote from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and this connection that he says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given a nice example in this regard. Because the young girl mentioned in this story had no husband, she had to fulfill her duties as a host by removing her bracelets so that each wrist held one bracelet only. In the same way, the process of jnana yoga, or spiritual advance by philosophical speculation, demands that the speculating sages live alone without any other association. Since jnanis have dedicated their lives to speculation, there will undoubtedly be endless argument and quarreling on technical points if many jnanis live together. In fact, we quoted the verse the other day, Tako Pritishta Shuta Yorvi Binana Savrishina. What is that verse? Anyways, the jnanis of great sages, when they come together, they always have different opinions. Dhammasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena katabha sapanta. Therefore, the solid truth of religious principles can be found in the heart of an unalloyed devotee of the Lord. Therefore, one should follow in their footsteps. And we gave Madhavendra Puri as the example. So, since Jnanis have dedicated their lives to speculation, there will undoubtedly be endless argument and quarreling on technical points if many Jnanis live together. Therefore, to keep a peaceful atmosphere, they must live alone. On the other hand, a king's daughter who has been duly married to an aristocratic prince fulfills her duties to her husband by dressing herself attractively with innumerable ornaments and approaching him for love. Similarly, the goddess of devotion, Bhakti Devi, decorates herself with the innumerable ornaments of the Vaishnavas, who come together to relish the sweet sound of the holy name of the Lord. Because pure Vaishnavas do not intimately associate with non-devotees, it may be said they reside alone, and thus they also fulfill the purpose of this verse. There cannot be any quarrel among pure Vaishnavas, because they are on the real platform of desirelessness, not wanting even salvation or mystic powers, what to speak of sense gratification. Because they are all devotees of Krishna, they may freely associate with one another for glorifying the Lord. So, that's how to live alone, is to live in the association of devotees and always discuss topics about Krishna. But as we said, that the theme of this talk is controlling the urge to speak, which cannot be addressed so simply and automatically, just talk about Krishna. So we said that there are some guidelines which are given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur about speaking about others. If we're going to speak about others, then we should know what is the proper speech when talking about others and what is improper speech. And therefore he very nicely delineates, you know, the circumstance in which both the renunciates and householders speak about others. And I wanted to read that. It's not in the chapter about Daryam, it's in the chapter about Prajalpa, which is one of those activities which are unfavorable for devotional service. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes the different types of Prajalpa. I'm not going to speak about them all because we're talking about controlling the urge to speak in relationship to speaking about others. But he does say that the different types of prajalpa are useless talks, arguments, gossip, debates, fault-finding in others, speaking falsehoods, blaspheming devotees, and worldly talk. They're all called prajalpa. And under the heading of gossip, that's where he expands on this point about speaking about others. And as we said in answer to that question the other day, that one of the anarthas is tattva vibhrama, which is to be ignorant about the obstacles in the path of devotional service. So, therefore, it's advantageous to know what is unacceptable talk. Even though, and we answered that question, even though we can't always speak about Krishna, at least if we know what is unacceptable talk, and we have enough intelligence to apply it on a case-by-case basis, at least restraint can help us along the path, and that's part of being patient that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about. Patient means that we should expect Krishna's mercy and to speak about Krishna continuously. It will happen someday. But what to do until I get there? What should I do? How should I be patient? Should I just let my tongue flap whenever it likes and just wait for the day to get Krishna's mercy? Is that patience? No, we should know. What should I do in a given circumstance when the opportunity to speak presents itself, when should I speak about others in a way that's acceptable, and when should I speak in a way that's not acceptable? And at least this way, by practicing some restraint, it as we said the other day also, it creates an atmosphere conducive for Vaishnava Sangha. Not only does it create an atmosphere conducive for Vaishnava Sangha because people will think more about speaking about Krishna, but it creates an atmosphere conducive for Vaishnava Sangha because people will actually be able to have more loving exchanges, because the fear of revealing one's mind in confidence is greatly reduced in the society of Vaishnavas who have learned when to speak about others and when not to speak about others. It's just a very natural, and that even becomes more conducive. It becomes more, more of a catalyst and an encouragement and inspiration to associate with devotees, especially to associate with other devotees to whom we can reveal our mind in confidence and inquire confidentially. And as we said, that previously the same tendency was there, otherwise why would Bhaktivinoda Thakur speak about these things? But previously it was Gramya Kata, even, was it? Lord Chaitanya told Raghunath Das, Gramya Kata na shunibe, Gramya Vartana kahibe. Do not speak like worldly people, Gramya Kata, and don't hear unnecessary talk. So Gramya Kata is village talk. So village talk is when people get together, they need something to talk about, and it's very easy to speak about others. And it can become idle gossip if one's not careful, and that's what creates enmity in a village, especially, but in the greater village now, as we said, in the globe, because of Facebook, we definitely have the village has grown to the globe for idle talk if we're not careful and we don't know what to take part in and what not to take part in. It could become definitely a battlefield for quarrel, for unnecessary talking. Anyways, I'm not going to get into Facebook bashing. It's not my... But anything can be employed in Krishna's service. But if we're not careful, it can work both ways. At one time, I posted... I'm a little bit not into Facebook, forgive me. But one time I posted a blog on my site. It showed the word... It was an article that I had read. And it showed the word Facebook written in powder. And it showed a person with a rolled up piece of paper. And the F was partially missing. And it was implying that too much, Facebook is okay if it's used for glorifying Krishna. I'm not going to... But when people start getting into this endless arguments... My God, I've heard so many devotees suffering from those arguments that they were victimized on Facebook. Anyways, it's to know how to employ a thing properly, I guess I should say. So, in the same way, when to speak about others, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur then goes on to say, a lot of it, I'll read, it's self-explanatory. Talking without reason about other people is extremely adverse to devotional service. Many people talk about others to establish their own reputation. Being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. The minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. Talking about others should be rejected in all respects. But in the practice of devotional service, there are many favorable topics that are faultless even though they are about others. Okay. There's some topics about others that are faultless. But you're going to find it's a very restricted list. Sorry. But it is a quite restricted list. But still, if we look at the list, again, it should become an impetus to ask ourselves, when we're talking about somebody else, what is the objective I'm trying to accomplish now? What is it? Am I glorifying? We said it's good talking about others. We gave the example last time about the Vaishnava who came to Lord Chaitanya and said, "What should I do? Previously I spoke ill about Vaishnavas. Now I realize I've committed a great offense by speaking unnecessarily about Vaishnavas. How do I rectify myself?" And Lord Chaitanya gave the example that just as a person who drinks poison can counteract the effects of that poison by drinking the nectar of immortality. So he says, similarly, with the tongue one may speak about others, but with the same tongue, he can counteract the effects by glorifying Vaishnavas. Not, it doesn't have to be in a, sometimes glorification can become a little bit too, I don't know what the word is, exaggerated. We should look for those qualities that other we see in others that are worthy of mentioning. Just like we quoted a verse, was it here? I can't remember, forgive me. I have one of those Kali Yuga memories. Quoted a verse from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, that pure devotional service is so transcendentally potent that simply by hearing about it, simply by glorifying it in response, simply by meditating on it, simply by faithfully and respectfully accepting that it exists, and simply by praising the service of others, even a person who hates the demigods and all living entities in the universe can immediately become purified. So, praising the service, when we see some service rendered by others, which is praiseworthy, which is notable, we don't have to necessarily, you know, speak about it in a way that's very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Hyperbolic.
Hyperbolic, yeah. Exaggerated hyperbolic, but there's another word that I'm looking for. It's not coming, but hyperbolic, we'll leave it at that. It's good. this devotee, like, they worked all day in the kitchen. I sometimes speak about a devotee. Here's an example. I'll tell you a little story about the Bhakti Sangama festival, about one devotee. It's a short story, but I tell it. It's a nice little story. At the Bhakti Sangama festival, the devotees there, they organized the festival in such a way that every day a different yatra takes charge of buying the bhoga, cooking, distributing the prasadam, cleaning up the kitchen, cleaning up after the distribution, cleaning all the containers, everything. The different yatra will take all responsibilities for one day, and when you have 10,000, 12,000 devotees, it's a lot of work. In fact, this particular festival, about this particular devotee, there happened to be 12,000 devotees there that year. And one day I went into the kitchen, and there was a devotee there washing the pots at the end of the day, and the room was like half the size of the temple room, and it was just filled with prasadam containers that he had been washing all day. And, you know, and he was the only one left. It was late at night. And I was thinking, oh my God. You know, I went over and I said, "Prabhu," I said, is everything okay? Is everything all right? Do you need any help?" And, you know, he looked at me and he said, "Yeah, I have a problem." I said, "What is it?" He said, "They're only going to let me do this one day." I tell that as a story. I speak about somebody. It's praising the service. You know, that's how he was thinking. "They're only going to let me do this one day. There's another temple coming here tomorrow, and I'm not going to be able to do it." So look for something that's praiseworthy. You know, that's Lord Chaitanya said, you know, with the same tongue, you can praise the devotees. Anyways, I don't know how I got on that topic, but...
Real praise.
So, and as I was saying here, that there's a limited window of opportunity, really, to speak about others, and that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to define, but it still doesn't mean we can't speak about others, but we should, again, think twice before we start speaking, and that's what we should try to learn from this lesson. He said, talking about others should be rejected in all respects. But in the practice of devotional service, there are many favorable topics that are faultless, even though they are about others. In order to completely renounce talking about others, one needs to live in the forest. And then he makes an interesting point. I don't know, Maharaj, maybe you'll have to help me with this one. He says, the two different types of practicing devotees are the householders and the renunciates. Because the renunciates have no business whatsoever with sense enjoyment, they can give up talking about others in all respects. I've learned that it's impossible to be in a position of a renunciate, especially having to deal with so many family members in the greater family of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, that I sometimes find myself having to hear about others. And I find myself having to speak about others. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur will explain under what circumstances even the renunciates have license to speak about others. It's interesting. But it's not that the renunciates can completely stop in all respects. He said that, but because a householder is engaged in earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining his family, he cannot completely give up talking about others. It is best for him to live in a Krishna-conscious family when all one's material activities are related with Krishna, then even his unavoidable talk about others becomes sinless and a part of devotional practice in relation to Krishna. He should not talk about others in a way that is detrimental to anyone. He should talk about others only whatever little is necessary in his Krishna-conscious family. He should not talk about others without reason. So he said, yes, it's okay, it's impossible, a householder, he has to earn to maintain his livelihood, he has to speak to others about his whatever it may be, his means of livelihood, and his protection of his family, to speak about his family members, he has to correct his family members, he has to speak about other family members with his family members, and there's definitely necessary to speak about others because of having to be engaged in these activities in relationship to the family. But he should never engage in talking about others, which is detrimental to anyone. And if his family is Krishna conscious, then whatever speaking he does about others within his family context is not an impediment to bhakti. But he says some other things. I'll go on. Moreover, when a guru enlightens his disciple on some topic, then unless he occasionally talks about others, his instruction may not be clear. When previous Mahajans have talked about others in this way, there is merit in such talk, not fault. So then what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, that sometimes when a guru is instructing his disciples, person is teaching his dependents, it may be necessary to point out, don't do this. Right? I'm trying to get you to do this, but you should avoid, when you see this behavior, not good. How can you say what's not good unless you talk about others? You have to say. And he says, to make your point clear, you end on this point. It's not like you spend your whole lecture on bashing. But to make the point clear, you have to, guru when instructing his disciples, he may have to point to, this example is not good. Don't, you know, try your best to avoid it. And then he quotes a verse. He quotes several verses. The first verse is a general example about others. The second verse is a more specific example about somebody who's not named. And the third example is about somebody specifically by name. And each of these examples were given as examples when sometimes the guru, when instructing, may have to say something about others. I'll read them. First is the general. Nidraya, he quotes Shukadeva Goswami. Nidraya hiyate naktam vyavayena chavavaya diva chate hayarajan. Anyways, I won't read all the Sanskrit. He speaks about the lifetime of such an envious householder is passed at night either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime either making money or maintaining family members. Persons devoid of atma-tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Pariksit saying, be careful. Don't be like this. Right. Just a general, it's a general about the envious householders who just live for sense gratification. Don't be like this. And he uses that as an example, as a general speaking about others. And then another interesting, he says, although Sukadeva Goswami talks about the materialists in order to instruct his disciple, he's not considered a prajalpi. Therefore, such activity should be considered beneficial. Again, in order to instruct his own disciples, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke about pseudo-renunciants in the following words from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then, Prabhu kahe varagi kari prakriti sambhashana nikite na paron amita haravadana. He says, this is about somebody but not mentioned. The Lord replied, I cannot tolerate seeing the face of a person who accepted the renounced order of life, but who still talks intimately with a woman. There are many persons with little in their possession who accept the renounced order of life like monkeys. They go here and there, engaging in sense gratification and speaking intimately with women. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my mind is not under my control. It does not like to see anyone in the renounced order who talks intimately with women. So, speaking about Chota Haridas, as we know, it's an instruction he gave, and his point is very clear, and the whole story and the concluding instructions at the end were, you know, that his instruction about Haridas Thakur was meant for, not only for those present, but for future generations. One has to be careful for those who accept the renounced order of life. There should be no intimate discussions with women. Okay. And he says that's the second instruction, which is not specifically spoken, the name is not given, but it's implied. And he had to say it because he was teaching everyone who was around him and he wanted to make the point clear. So that's his example of, again, a concluding instruction showing an example that this is something that's not good. And Lord Chaitanya himself did it. Unless one speaks in this way, while instructing and while concluding a subject, there is no benefit for oneself or others. Therefore, when the previous acharyas have personally set example and taught others, how will we be benefited by acting contrary to their instruction? Now here's something. Here's something everybody's going to latch on to. And I'll tell you why. He says, if one discusses in this way the improper behavior current in a religious sect or amongst the general public, then such talk is not adverse to devotional service. When somebody hears that and says, I knew it. I knew there was a way. I knew I could get in a justification for everything I really hope to accomplish by speaking about others. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur also concludes this topic. This topic. Very important. He concludes this topic about gossip with this following sentence. He concludes it. Those who talk about others while influenced by devotional impediments like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction are offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi. So he's qualifying it that if you're going to go out and just, you know, speak in a way that you, as if you need to correct something, better make sure before you do it that you don't become an offender to the feet of Bhakti Devi. And as we said before, that for those who are offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi, their minds can never be peaceful. Their minds are always like they can't control it. And the only way they think, you know, just like we said the other day, that a person controls himself, and then by first controlling himself, then he can control others. Sometimes people think that preaching means telling everybody else what they're doing wrong. It's a very convenient way to avoid, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, it's a very convenient way to avoid looking within one's own heart, because if I just see what everything is wrong, and I spend my whole time absorbed in finding everything that's wrong, then I don't have enough time. I'm just too absorbed in those things to look in my own heart to think about what's going on in there. You know, why is it that that's all I can see? Also, they don't stop to think that maybe there's a reason why that's the only thing I can see. You know, it's just like the example of Duryodhana when he was asked to go around the kingdom to see if he could find anybody who was, you know, greater than him. And Duryodhana said, I don't see anybody greater than me. He was offense personified. And when Yudhishthira Maharaj was asked to find somebody who was lower than him, Yudhishthira Maharaj said, I don't find anybody who's lower than me. So he makes the point that if you're going to speak, first check. Look. Because as we said, this whole Bhakti Loka, it's an essay to sadhakas. Persons who are doing some work. They're doing their work. Right? The sadhaka is doing work. If he's not patient and doesn't do his work, then he can, as we read in the beginning of Daya, patience, if he's not patient and tries to do his work, then he can never achieve his goals. But he has to be patient. So patience means, yes, I have to try to control my tongue. I have to try to become attracted to hearing about Krishna. And at the same time, patient, that someday, hopefully, my heart will become clean. And again, this is not meant in any way to immediately classify everybody, because we have that tendency as, oh, I'm just a prajalpi. It's meant to open the doors for opportunities to avoid these mistakes. It's all. Because we're not spontaneously attracted yet. Two people come together, there'll be idle talk and disagreements. That was what the Avaduta Brahman learned, two people. And when a lot of people are living together, there'll be quarrel. Better to be alone. Being alone means being amongst Vaishnavas, always talking about Krishna. But until we are elevated to that status of a Vaishnava, as we are all aspiring Vaishnavas, and Prabhupada even said we should never think ourselves as Vaishnavas. We should think ourselves as aspiring Vaishnavas. In fact, there was at one time, I think it was a poem that was submitted to Prabhupada, and the author of the poem wrote in the poem himself as a Vaishnava, and Prabhupada corrected him and said, oh no, this is not right. One should never think he's a Vaishnava. He should be thinking he's an aspiring Vaishnava. I'm not saying the name of the author. No need. Point is there. But so as aspiring Vaishnavas, we should know what to aspire for. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given us these guidelines to aspire for till the day we become spontaneously attracted. There's more, and I'll try to finish this in time. And wait a minute. I got to the... oh yes, that's right, I remember where I got to the point. He says... if one discusses in this way the improper behavior current in a religious sect or amongst the general public, then such talk is not adverse to devotional service. I have an understanding of that, but I'll go on for the time being. Even if one sometimes talks about a particular person, there's no fault. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Maitreya Muni, the foremost devotee, spoke about Vena Maharaj in this way. The great sage Maitreya continued, thus the king who became unintelligent due to his sinful life and deviation from the right path became actually bereft of all good fortune. He could not accept the requests of the great sages, which the sages put before him with great respect, and therefore he was condemned. So that's the quote he gives for a specific person. He says that Sri Maitreya Rishi needed to speak about others in this way. He spoke to his audience to instruct them. This is not prajalpa. The practicing devotee normally discusses ancient history in the association of devotees. Occasionally they talk about non-devotees. Such talk is always auspicious and favorable to devotional service. But those who talk about others while influenced by devotional impediments like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction, are offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi. And this is his conclusion to only one of the topics of prajalpa, which was gossip. That was it. We didn't get into arguments, we didn't get into all the other categories that he gave for prajalpa. It's a whole essay in of itself. This is only just gossip or controlling the urge to speak, especially when it comes to talking about others. So as we said, there is limited framework, limited window when speaking about others. And as we also explained that we understand the purpose that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had in these essays, the audience he was speaking to, he was primarily speaking to householders. And because that's what, from Godurma Kalpatavi, and when he was spreading the Namhatta, he was specifically, the whole method of spreading the holy name of the Lord was mostly amongst householders. And it's not that the renunciants were freed from such propensities. And that's what I'm not saying in any way that the brahmacharis and the sannyasis, they were not culpable in any way. But he focused it on the householders because householders, they have the license to speak about others. They have that license. And he gave the reasons why they have that license to speak about others. But again, when the householders are living together in the community, in the village, then he was specifically addressing what topics one should be careful about when speaking about others amongst themselves. And if we look, we'll see that there, and I once, when I was looking this up, I once did a scan of the database on the word gossip. There's a lot of references. There's a lot of references from Prabhupada, from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I think there was like at least 250 references just to the word gossip. It was definitely elaborated on by our previous acharyas. And my intention in giving this presentation, as I said, was simply to help everyone to become aware of the pitfalls. And as part of the process of becoming patient, that yes, someday I will get Krishna's mercy if I'm patient. Patient means not just waiting for the day to come, but actually making the effort at the same time. And one of the efforts was, Maharaj has always spoken so nicely about the holy name. I take great inspiration from his holy name book. I read it constantly about the different types of anarthas. One of the anarthas is, kutinat, duplicity, fault-finding. And unless one actually endeavors to become free from these anarthas, then it's very difficult for the pure holy name to become manifest. I remember reading about the clouds of the anarthas and the fog of the ignorance, that these two clouds, the clouds and the fog, they have to be dissipated in order to see the sun, which is naturally illuminated in the sky. So in the same way, the clouds of anarthas that are obstructing our realization of the pure holy name, these anarthas are what's preventing us from experiencing what Rupa Goswami describes when he says, when the two syllables Krishna, when he speaks them, they dance in the courtyard of his heart, his mind and senses become stunned. Why is that not happening? Well, because of the clouds of anarthas and the fog of ignorance. We're not able to purely experience the holy name of the Lord. So we should know what those anarthas are. Otherwise, Nama parada yuktam nam namanya yiva yharanchugam avishanti prayuktani tanyavarta kritani cha. The chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is meant to be performed by one should go on chanting the holy name of the Lord, because even if he commits offenses, if he goes on chanting, gradually he'll become freed from those offenses. So what does it mean to go on chanting even when he's committing offenses? It means to become aware of what those anarthas are and to pray, as we said the other day also, we gave the example that there's no switch to turn them off and to get rid of them. We're dependent on mercy in order to clear them. So if we become more and more conscious of our need for mercy, and we consciously pray to Krishna to help us overcome these anarthas, I see them, they're there in my heart, this kutinati, this fault-finding propensity is there. And now I have a little bit better understanding of the circumstances in which it can be avoided. Mm-hmm. This is the intention that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying. You see, now you have, here's a better understanding of the circumstances by which this can be avoided. Now, armed with knowledge, one should, it may not go away immediately, but at least one knows that how to avoid that tendency, and one knows what to pray for, that if I see that within myself, then at least I have the added benefit of looking in myself first before I start pointing it out in others. That's a sadhaka. A sadhaka is somebody, as we said, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur described, as somebody who works on himself. And by working on oneself, then one will become gradually make progress and can actually come to that platform where someday he may even, they look at the examples given, Chaitanya Charitamrita, who was it? Haridas Pandit? He was a Dosha Darshi. Haridas, he was glorified as a Dosha Darshi. He was, a Dosha Darshi means that wherever he looked, he could never see any faults. A Dosha Darshi. It would be nice to come to that platform. That to never see any faults, but when we hear about such examples, we can become inspired that they do exist and hope that someday that by practicing and praying, we can become a Dosha Darshi. And Rupa Goswami has also recommended in his Upadeshamrita that in regards to respect, we should always be prepared to respect everyone, even those who are chanting the holy name of the Lord, even though their behavior may not be perfect. We respect them from a distance and offer obeisances. Those who are more fully engaged in devotional services, we may, and we see they're absorbed in service, we only offer obeisances. And for those who's completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness and spreading Krishna consciousness, and who are completely devoid of the propensity of criticizing others, then we should hear from them and serve them. In this way, Rupa Goswami has also given us a guideline based on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's principles that we should learn how to respect all living beings. And he even said in Chaitanya Charitamrita that one who chants my holy name and never criticizes any living entity, he says, I will give him love of Godhead. Chaitanya Bhagavad, excuse me, Vrindavan Das Thakur says, those who chant my name, always incessantly chant my name and never criticize, they will get perfection. And he goes on, there are some other quotes actually. I have a few minutes, maybe. It's just another nice quote I'd like to refer to in this connection. If I can find it quickly, forgive me. I didn't expect to read it. It's under notes. Note. Here it is. Thank you. Chaitanya Bhagavat. Oh, there's several of them. He quotes the verse, if a person is knowingly or unknowingly envious of a Vaishnava who is engaged in the non-duplicitous service of Lord Hari, his degradation is inevitable. Of this there is no doubt. Apart from this, if even persons claiming to be devotees of Vishnu are envious of ordinary living entities, and give various troubles to them, they are actually far away from devotional service to Vishnu and are not fit to be called human beings. Their worship of Vishnu becomes the source of misery. Those endowed with an absence of jiva-daya, or compassion for other living entities, and yet proudly consider themselves servants of Lord Vishnu, achieve the threefold miseries rather than the devotional service of the Lord. And then there is another quote. He says, this is Vrindavan Das. Lord Chaitanya, everyone please give your thoughts to me. Please hear the truth I will now say. Anyone who neglects my servant and then worships me is very lowly and degraded. Such a person cuts me into pieces. His worship is like fire burning my body. My holy name, which is a kalpa vriksha tree, destroys anyone who blasphemes my servant. The living entities who live in the numberless universes are all my servants. Therefore, any living entity who harms another living entity will perish. We quoted that verse from the other day. Jiva Goswami quotes in the Bhakti Sandarbha. He quotes that verse from the Avanti Brahman that of disrespect towards another living entity. He quotes that verse that if a sharp arrows that pierce the chest to enter the heart are not as painful as the arrows of the insulting words from a materialist which enter into the heart, pierce the heart and become lodged there. He said that's even more painful. And he gave this as evidence that disrespect for other living entities is to willfully cause them pain. Like, knowing, I know this is going to make them suffer. Of course, as we said, the person who came to Lord Chaitanya said, I didn't willfully do it. I didn't know. I was ignorant. What should I do? But then there are those who are envious who willfully do it, knowing it's going to cause suffering. So he says, from Brahma down to the unmoving plants, every living being is Lord Krishna's potency. Therefore, all the scriptures say, anyone who blasphemes another angers Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna delivers any person who is not a blasphemer and who once chants Krishna. That is the truth. It is the truth. And, it's coming. If a person studies the four Vedas and then blasphemes others, he will fall into the hell called Kumbhipaka. There he will suffer birth after birth. If a sannyasi blasphemes an innocent person, the sannyasi will fall down. All his piety will perish. Raising his arms, fear Lord Chaitanya declared to the entire world, renouncing criticism of others, everyone please chant Lord Krishna's name. I will personally deliver anyone who does not criticize others and who once chants Krishna. That is the truth. It is the truth. Hare Krishna.
Wonderful, thank you.
At 6 o'clock. Maharaj, would you like to add something?
No, not add. This is a very rich presentation, full presentation. I wanted to ask you a question. Maybe I'm... please help me to see. There was a talk of not talking about others. Now, is the only reason why we should not talk about others this type of negative, the fault finding or criticizing or quarrel? Or is there another reason? The reason why I'm asking is I find really the scriptures, for instance, discussing life, the life of Bharata Maharaj, as a journey so that we can learn. And the Bhagavatam is full of other talks about others, other Vaishnavas. And Briya Bhagavatamrita is about our two heroes. So many. Is there maybe a dimension which is also relevant in bhakti that when you talk about others, you might be too much on the social platform or amongst the world. You might be connecting too much with the world of men, and you should... Is it just because we fear criticism that we don't wish to talk about others and the negative things, like we don't want to create enmity and so on? Or is there another dimension I'm missing?
Well, talking about others, as we said, that when giving an instruction, it's necessary to talk about others. If the person is in that position of having to give instruction. But if a person is in a situation where he's talking to another person, it is not a position of giving an instruction to that person. He's in the position of speaking about another person. And why is he doing it? Is he doing it because he wants to glorify that person? Or does he want to destroy the reputation of a person to establish his own reputation? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur specifically brings to light the particular motives that could be there when we start speaking about others in a loose discussion. But when one is that, if therefore he says, before you speak about others, do a little inventory and make sure there's no pride there, There's no envy there. There's no hatred there. There's no desire for distinction there. And if you've actually looked within the heart and you feel, okay, I think that there is a purpose, I have to say this to this person to help them. Especially if the person is looking up to that devotee as somebody I need help from. But to help another person simply by bringing disrepute of the character of another person and not having such a relationship with that person and speaking unnecessarily. Now granted, the point unnecessarily is clearly used here many times. What is unnecessary and what is necessary? So as far as I can understand, the little buffer that should take place in the mind before one... Buffer. A buffer is something that you put in between one thing and the next. So it's like if you have two objects that are going to strike each other, you put some cotton in between to act like a buffer. So a little buffer we put in the mind between the mind and the tongue, right? Is we should think, is this necessary? Is this necessary? What am I accomplishing? Is it really for the benefit of this person? Or is it for my benefit? Am I going to get some benefit out? Well, if it's for my benefit, what benefit am I looking from this? Do I want prestige? Do I want to be recognized as a savior? Right? I'm saving everybody from, you know, that sometimes that may be there, and a lot of times it's not even accurate. Anyways, I won't go into all that, the potential that's there. But point is it necessary? That's all. If it's necessary, and it fits the criteria here, then at least I've buffered my tongue with the question, is it necessary? Before I just, you know, as we oftentimes use it, look before you leap. Before I just simply leap and find out there's a huge ravine that I'm leaping into. So, but I'd say that's the objective that should be there. And then when somebody's in a position of having to instruct, then you'll find many examples. Vaishnavas, you know, our acharyas are always talking about others. And we're talking about their past, but they always conclude that their past may have been this, but look now where they are now. And this is how they got there. So it's actually the past is a glorification of pure devotional service. I'll give you an example that comes to my mind. I recently read Shyama Sundar's book, Chasing Rhinos with the Swami. Okay. Wonderful book. You read it?
Not yet.
And somehow it landed in my hand in Moscow. It's because I really wanted it. Somehow, somebody, I just landed it in my hand. So I read it. Usually when something comes about a Prabhupada, I just find a place to devour it. In the beginning, he talks a lot about himself and his drug days. It's a lot. And I started thinking, Shyama, you know. You know, I'm friends with Shyama Sundar, you know, like, you know, and I think, Shyama, you know, is it maybe a little bit too much? But then, but when I come to the end, like, it's a complete glorification of Prabhupada. Complete. Like, this is what Prabhupada did to somebody like that. He made him a fanatic lover of Prabhupada. Fanatic. You know, and so the whole story has to be there. So Bhagavatam also gives the whole story. Well, previously he was this, he was degraded, he was falling, but he became a fanatic lover of God. Because everywhere in Bhagavatam is a glorification of pure devotional service. So sometimes it's necessary to speak about others. But the conclusion is always pure devotional service. It's not spent on just, well... So, I mean, that's my understanding. the license to speak about others. It's like, is it necessary? What's the conclusion? What's the point? What are you trying to prove in this? Are you glorifying Krishna, or are you just, do you want some other objective accomplished? I think I went over time. Yeah, so I guess we have to stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to Prabhupada.